You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Babylon 5 ended a great war and united 100 alien races in peace. Danger didn't die. It just went underground with new heroes and new evils to carry the torch.
We need to make sure they all understand we will not be intimidated.
What is wrong with you people?
We have to set him against himself.
It's an entire new season of Babylon 5 with all new episodes.
And so begins.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is exactly what he appears.
Nothing's the same anymore.
Commander Sinclair is being reassigned.
Why don't you eliminate the entire non-holo?
I was a void head, reaching out of the star.
Who are you?
President Clark has signed a decree today declaring
martial
law.
These orders have forced us to declare independence.
I saw people get off their encounter-suited butts and do something.
You are the one who watched.
To Zahadu, who will die.
Why are you here? Do you have anything worth living for?
Think of my beautiful city.
Giants in the playground.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
We are here to place President Clark under arrest.
Turn around. Very, very slowly.
Hello, Mr. Garibaldi. Good to see you again. I was wondering how you were doing. Have you written, called?
Shut up.
Obviously haven't improved your manners.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic, Babylon 5.
This week, Season 5, Episode 7, Secrets of the Soul.
I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. Leta becomes closer to Byron and the colony of telepaths, while Franklin investigates a secret from the Hayak race's distant past. Written by JMS and directed by Tony Dow, this episode was released on March the 4th, 1998, and takes place from May the 25th to May the 28th, 2262. And our guest stars this week are Fiona Dwyer as Kirin, Jack Hannibal as Peter, Stuart McLean as Carl, Jana Robbins as Ambassador Tal, Roger Hewlett as Thug, Skip Stellarect as Security Guard, and Billy Scudder as Drowsy Captain. Some great names there. And uncredited are Bill Blair as Alien, Lawrence Gogan, I'm assuming it's Gogan, I don't really know, as Telepath, Christina Gavin as Telepath, and Jeffrey Willeth as Ambassador Ulkesh, which is archive footage. Okay, guys, what did we think of this episode?
Byron-heavy episode, so yay. You know, when telepaths make love, you see test tube babies, I guess. That's great. Okay.
Well, you're making babies, after all.
I mean, that's true. I did enjoy the part with the Hayak race and their long dormant secrets. So even though it's heavily focused on the Doctor, he hasn't been too bad these last few seasons. I felt like we didn't get enough from the Hayak. That seemed like it could have been a full episode or a couple episode arc or something, or like a mini series or something. Because I love history stuff, and this would have been something really fun to explore. But we got a taste of it, I guess, so that's cool. We finally found out what the name of that race is that we've been seeing all these years. So that was good. And yeah, like I said, Byron stuff, and we learned that the Vorlons created the telepaths, although I thought we already knew that, but maybe we didn't. I'm not sure.
I thought we did, yeah.
I thought so too.
Oh, but yeah, of course. He knows everything. Dan, what did you think?
Well, I mean, it all just went by like a BCFMO, a brightly colored, fast moving object, just as Byron said. I've had to write that down because it's like, what is that? What is the point in that? Yeah, I didn't enjoy this episode, I have to say.
What do you mean?
Yeah, it's crazy. I, you know, I feel like I want to give the telepaths their due, or the telepaths, as Byron seems to want to say every single time. I want to give them so much credit, but there's just nothing there. I'm just so bored. So
I like, told you.
There is two sides to this episode, and like when the best one is a Dr. Franklin centric episode, you know you're in a bad situation. It was fun. I like the idea that there's this, you know, mystery race. They don't want to give away what they actually got up to. They don't want to give all the medical data because then it will uncover this big conspiracy. Again, we didn't really know the species. Like Sean said, it would have been nice to have had that building up, you know, that these species were being a bit cagey and he's constantly trying to badger them for all this information. And then this is the big reveal. But it kind of came out of nowhere. There was this whole thing when we first meet the two representatives where, like, what if he finds out the thing, you know, the thing that we all did. And then when one of them walks away, the other one looks at the camera and then says he will then have to die if he finds out the thing. It took me straight out. So when the better part of the episode also has laugh out loud moments like this, it's not going very well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the discussion. Let's just say that.
Okay, so bit of foreshadowing there, I think. Yeah, okay. I mean, it's as Sean said, the good bits of the Hayek, and as Dan said, the bad bits of the Hayek, and yeah. the rest of it is pretty forgettable. But anyway, let's get on with the review.
Hit me again.
It's in there.
Hit me a third time.
Okay. Hit me one more time. I've got to put that in. Doctor's personal log. Add the personal log here. Dr. Franklin is examining a pacmara. They can eat pretty much anything on land and in the air, but not from the sea. Dr. Franklin gives him a barium meal. It's one of the most awful things you could possibly have, and I've had two, so I should know. It is awful. Either of you two had a barium meal?
I don't believe so, but it certainly didn't agree with the pacmara.
So what it is, it has the consistency and taste of... do you have polyfiller, you know, like crack sealant type stuff?
Yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah.
You know, mix it with powder and water and it turns into a very thick paste. It's yummy. Like that when you drink it. It sticks to everything. So as soon as you put it in, so you think, oh, I'll just drink it like a glass of milk. And you end up with like a milk mustache because it goes straight onto your lips. It sticks to your lips. It sticks in your mouth. It's all over your teeth. You drink it and it goes down like a solid lump. And because it's barium, obviously it's slightly radioactive, and they can track it through x-rays and see how it goes through your gut. And I had it because I have a hiatus hernia, as it turns out. So, and that was a few years ago. The thing is, what they don't tell you is it's got to come out. And it still likes to stick to things and grips like a... I mean, when you say like, you know, it really sticks. It grips onto anything it can as it's coming out. Like you strain so much to try and get the damn thing out, and it hits the toilet with such a bang as it hits the floor. It's like a lead lump of lead that comes out your backside and it hits the water. And then it takes about, as I found out one time, 4 or 5 flushes of the toilet and a 2-gallon bucket to get it around the U-bend. It is awful stuff. And I've had to have 2 of them. So yeah, it's not nice. Not nice at all. It doesn't taste bad. It's just like the consistency, the powdery sort of yuckiness of it. Ugh.
Okay.
So it's no wonder I don't blame the pacmara for throwing it up all over the place. And Zach is having problems with more and more telepaths. Apologies if you listen to that and you're eating your food. Don't listen to this on your lunch break. Oh, it's too late, isn't it? Zach is having problems with more and more telepaths turning up, but Byron gives his assurance that all the paperwork will be passed on to Zach in due course, if he lets them on board. Whilst travelling down in the elevator, one of the telepaths, Peter, takes out a silver globe and gets it to hover above his hands.
Yeah, good Peter. He stutters and he's telekinetic.
Mm.
Those are his defining characteristics. That'll be important later.
I just hope his telekinesis doesn't stutter as he stutters, because you could be lifting that ball up and it'll then go, oh, it's moving around, yeah. Or yeah. Zach wants to know why Lita is with those people, as he doesn't trust them all, you know, the way they all hang around like that. And Byron is the worst of them. Lita says that Byron is a sweet, charming, sympathetic man who is trying to create a better world.
You and the others needed my help during the Shadow War, and I did that. I put my life on the line, and what did I get? You were going to boot me into smaller quarters because I couldn't afford anything better? The only way I got out of that was to rejoin the Side Corps, and you don't even want to know the deal I had to make to pull that one off.
Lita.
I'm not finished. After all that, you had the nerve to ask me to risk my life a second time during the Civil War back home, and stupid me, I did it.
And what did she get out of that?
Nothing. Nada. Zip. Zilch. I got no life, no hope, no prospects. Now along comes Byron. And for the first time in a long while, I feel like someone actually cares about what happens to me.
I care what happens to you, Lita.
Yeah, well, maybe that's true. But talk is cheap, Zach. Byron is putting his life on the line to create something for his people. And I'm one of them. He's given us back a sense of dignity, community. I'm proud of that, and I'm proud of him. If you can't handle that, I'm sorry, but there's nothing I can do about it.
In the meantime, Byron is walking through down below when he is stopped by another Cockney gangster. Oh, here we go again. They threaten the telepaths, and Byron tells the leader to hit me. Oh, no, it's hit me. The gangster duly hits him. Byron says, hit me again.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Which he does. After a third time, Byron asks him if punch one was the same as punch three. The gangster is confused. Byron then says, if you don't know the difference between one, two, and three, then what's the difference between four, five, and six? His anger is not to do with the telepaths, and therefore it is nothing to do with Byron. And then they continue their journey past the gangster's mob. In my experience, philosophy never beats a punch in the face. Franklin is speaking to the Hayek ambassador, Ambassador Tal. They are joined by their aide, Kirin. The doctor explains that he would like access to the genetic medical files so they can protect them from diseases from other species. He gives his solemn oath that this information will not be passed on to anybody else. Kirin asks him if he was being tortured and was given the choice of death or revealing the information, which would he choose? He confirms he would rather die than allow his work to be used in genetic warfare. They agree to give him the information. Of course, they are hiding something which Kirin is nervous about revealing, and says that if Franklin betrays them, he will die. Lisa finds Byron with a face that only a piece of steak could repair. Lita says there was as many of them as there was of the gangsters. Byron says if they had resorted to violence, then seven of their people would have been hurt instead of the one. Violence is not their way. Lita disagrees. But it doesn't take long before they agree to disagree and start smooching like a pair of teenagers at the local high school prom. He asks Lita to stay the night, but she says she doesn't belong here, so Byron takes her to the group and says Lita doesn't feel as though she belongs here. They all get up to hug her, and with the music to from the end of last week's episode serenading them, they get it on. Kirin has brought the last of the files to Dr. Franklin. He says he doesn't understand why their files only go back 800 years when their civilization goes back several thousand years. She says he has all the information he needs and leaves. Franklin then asks the computer for all the information he has on the Hayek. There is no information on the Hayek from 800 years previous, so they must be hiding something. The telepaths are entering an elevator, and unfortunately, there's not enough room for everybody, so Peter must have to wait for the next one. When he comes out of the elevator, there's nobody waiting for him, and he doesn't know where they are. Of course, he runs into the same gangsters as before. He starts to stutter, so they take the Mickey out of him and take his backpack of food away from him. He starts to use his telekinetic powers to throw things at the gang, but he doesn't have enough power to beat them all away. The leader of the gang grabs a pipe and beats Peter repeatedly. Franklin is trying to save Peter's life in Medlab. Byron and Lita arrive, and Franklin asks if they know who did it. Byron says yes, and he's concerned that his people will go after them. And they are. They attack one of the gangsters by making him think he's on fire, just as Byron arrives and manages to stop them. But just then, Zack appears with a security deal and arrests them. Franklin is still trying to find out about the missing Hayek records. Byron is locked up in a cell and is concerned that his people will attack the rest of the gang. We see a scene where the Cockney thug is being beaten up. Franklin's search pulls up a recording of a message from a Drazi pilot referencing Hayek Dill or Hayek Doe. I couldn't really work out how it was pronounced. There is nothing in the Hayek records, so he searches all of the records for that reference. His search obviously finds something as he leaves Medlab. Unfortunately, he is being followed by Kirin, and she points a gun at his head and tells him to do what she says, or he will die. She takes him to a cargo bay, where Franklin says he knows their secret.
And save your time, Kirin. I know your secret. The Hayek, though, they're all dead, aren't they? It's a case of parallel evolution. Two sentient races developed on your world. The other race splitting off from the main line about 1 million years ago, like the Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon on Earth. Except in your case, they didn't die out.
Yes.
At first, they competed for living space and resources. Then they learned to live with each other.
For a time.
And all the while, there was intermarrying between the two sides, wasn't there?
It was a great scandal. But it continued throughout our history.
Until 1200 of your years ago, religious laws were passed that made it immoral for one line to marry into the other. Then immoral became illegal, then illegal, punishable by death, and then...
And then it just became more efficient for you to wipe out the entire race.
They were hunted down over centuries.
They were hunted down in every corner of our world. There were bounties placed on their heads. They were forbidden to leave our homeland. They tried to slip away, but any captain found transporting them was subject to arrest and execution. 40 million of them. The funeral pyres burned night and day.
It was a long time ago.
However, the birth rate of the Hayek is down 20% and has been decreasing steadily for centuries.
Take a look at the numbers for our population growth.
Well, they're not growing, they're shrinking. The birth rate is down nearly 20%. Looks like it's been decreasing steadily for centuries, but... something in your biological makeup is breaking down.
Yes.
They are a dying people unless Dr. Franklin can help them.
You needed the Hayek, didn't you? You needed something in their DNA to keep your species growing through interbreeding. Without it...
We are dying. We killed the Hayek, and in so doing, we killed ourselves. It took us a long time to discover the cause, but now there is nowhere to go. We are a dying people. Unless you help us.
He says no, because they cut out all of those parts of their history.
You hold us responsible for those who were killed.
Yes.
Even though we ourselves were not yet born.
You helped hide the truth about what happened by revising your history. Cutting out the parts you didn't like. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that makes you an accomplice after the fact.
It's our shame. We won't have it exposed.
Well, that's your choice.
He says it would take several planets' resources to help them, as it is such a big job.
But what it means is, morally, I can't help you. Besides, something as massive as this, it's beyond my capabilities. It would take the resources of several league worlds to conduct studies on your biology, find out what was lost, develop a means of restoring it on a planetary basis. It's too big of a job to be finished in my lifetime, but we could get started. It may not work. But if you keep this a secret, nothing will be done, and your people, your race, will eventually die out.
Byron is brought to Zack, who releases him, as his story about him helping the gangster has been verified. He and Lita return to his quarters. He is distraught that his followers have killed the gangster, and he doesn't know which ones were responsible. He feels ashamed that he hasn't taught them better. Leeta understands why they did it, but can't condone it. She tells him that she is his... Oh, here we go. I can't even pronounce that word that I've written down. She tells him that she is his parabolic widow, Willow, and asks him to rest in her and takes off her clothes. There then follows what are the most bizarre sex scenes I've ever seen. Her eyes turn black and all the telepaths in the room feel what is going on. There are babies floating in jars, Vorlons fighting in space, telepaths crying, more floating babies in jars, telepaths crying, more babies in jars. I don't know whether I could have sex with that many telepaths watching me.
It was something else.
It was something else. It wasn't a sex scene.
Yeah. Because I half expected them to start singing like the Kumbaya song as well at the exact same time.
The only thing I was missing was all of them holding candles and standing there.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Byron has discovered from the visions Leeta was having during sex that the Vorlons were the ones who created the telepaths. What? That's what he takes away from those visions? They took people from their homeworlds over many centuries and genetically developed them to become telepaths because they needed telepaths in the war against the Shadows. Byron is angry, and Leeta points out that there are no more Vorlons left. He says that there are other races are still here, and he wants them to make it right, which means giving them a homeworld of their own, somewhere where they can be with their own people. He will speak to the Alliance and put their case before them and see if they will do the right thing. Leeta asks, and if they can't? Byron replies, then they will make them an offer they cannot refuse.
So that was an episode.
It was, wasn't it? And here's something you can't refuse.
This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
After a long wait, new Doctor Who is on its way. We're gearing up to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the show with a brand new Doctor. Let's welcome Shuti Gatwa as the 14th Doctor.
No. Shuti is the 15th Doctor. David Tennant is the 14th Doctor.
Wait. I thought David Tennant was the 10th Doctor. Okay, I'm confused.
Confused? Well, your friends here at the Earth Station Who podcast are here to help you through all your Doctor Who questions. Check us out wherever fine podcasts are found.
Okay, trivia. Only 3 of the 11 regular cast members appear in this episode. Dr. Franklin, Zach Allen, and Leeta Alexander.
Yeah.
Did either of you feel that there was something missing?
Uh-huh, especially when I watched the next episode and there was John and Delenn, and I'm like, aha!
Yeah. Oh, I remember those people.
That's right. It was very noticeable. Not during so much, but certainly afterwards, mm-hmm. that there was nobody else there. Mm. So, Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
No, there's not.
There you go, you see. Hardly any trivia, no Star Trek connections. But what we have here is a quick explanation about what we're going to be watching over the next few weeks, because in our watch order, we are following the Lurker's Guide, which you can find, which I have the website here, on babylon5.fandom.com/wiki/viewing order, which has a number of different viewing orders you can watch. You can either watch it via the DVDs or the broadcast order. You can watch the Lurker's Guide, which is what we're doing, or you can watch the historical guide, which does it chronologically. So, Strange Relations, which was last week's episode, is what you would normally find in the original broadcast and DVD order running first. We then do this week's episode, Secrets of the Soul. Then we do Day of the Dead. Then we do Kingdom in the Kingdom of the Blind, and so on. However, if you do watch it that way, Strange Relations, Jakar and Londo leave for the Centauri Prime homeworld. Secrets of the Soul, this episode, they don't appear, which is fine. Then Day of the Dead, they're on the station. Now, without any giving away too many spoilers, there's no mention that they have been away or that they have returned. Then in the Kingdom of the Blind, they're on Centauri Prime talking to the Regent, which is next week's episode. So continuity-wise, makes no sense whatsoever. And I remember watching that the first time, which was a few years ago, because it's the first time I'd watched the season 5. And I watched it in broadcast order, and I thought, hang on. Didn't they leave last week, and now they're back? But okay, fine. And then suddenly they're back again over on Centauri Prime, and it just made no sense whatsoever. However, you can watch it. If you do it in chronological watch order, Day of the Dead is actually placed before Learning Curve, which is a couple of episodes ago, which has the effect of revealing the nature of Lockley's relationship with Sheridan in an offhand comment in Day of the Dead before the mystery and reveal at the end of Learning Curve and halfway through Strange Relations. So that really sort of throws it out as well. So even the historical one is not quite good enough to do. Hence, the Lurker's Guide say, do it in the order that we are going to do, which is Strange Relations, which was last week, Secrets of the Soul this week, In the Kingdom of the Blind next week, and then about three or four episodes later, we do Day of the Dead, which I know is Sean didn't want to hear because that's his favourite episode. Or could be a favourite episode. We don't know.
Mystery.
Yes. So, there you go. So that's the reason for the out-of-order appearances of these episodes. However, if you're listening to this podcast and you're watching it in an order that you want to watch it in, of course you don't have to listen to us in the correct order. You can just handpick the episodes of our podcasts in the order that you would like to listen to them in. So, there you go. Everybody's happy.
I know I'm happy.
You're happy because we got to the end of this episode. Correct. So, ratings. We give our ratings out of 5 because it's Babylon 5. And IMDb give their ratings out of 10. They have given this a 6.5, which actually makes it a little bit higher than last week's episode, I believe. Because that equates to a 3.25 in our scale. So, Sean, what did you reckon?
I reckon it's not a 3.25, that's for sure. It's I don't know. Let's go 2.25. I got nothing more to say. I said it all. But the Hayek stuff was kind of all right, and the Byron stuff and the thug stuff. It's just nobody cares. Let's be done with the telepaths. Let's give them their home world or kill them all off. Nobody wants to know anything more about these guys. That's it. That's all I got.
Dan, over to you.
I'm feeling Sean's energy here. There's literally nothing else to say, is there? I mean, we're retreading same ground with the telepaths. People don't like them. They get beaten up. They get in trouble. And then they get away with it and get put back into the brown sector. It's just the same thing, other than the fact that Byron now finds out why telepaths exist. I can't really see anything different in this episode that we haven't already had story beats for the last 4 episodes. So that whole half of the episode, that's it. So it can't be more than 2.5. It can't be half an episode, because half an episode sucks. The other half, I just don't care. Like, it should have been an episode to itself, or a mystery that's been building for ages. And again, the big reveal is that a species we've never seen were killed off and murdered in a big massive genocide, and it was a cover-up. And okay, all right, this virtually
a long time ago,
800 years ago.
800 years ago. Oh no, what did they do? I was not invested. I think, other than the Pac Mara having a bit of an episode with the little drink, I just there was literally nothing else that was going to stand out in my memory on this one. Seeing that, you know, Lita had seen the babies in the jars and everything like that, kind of like a weird sci-fi thing. But again, nothing to save it. So I'm going to go exactly the same as last week and 1.5.
Ooh, wow. Okay. So yeah, I agree with both of what you said there. The telepaths, we could have done the sex scene or something similar and found out the Vorlons had been, you know, the creators all along. Nice reveal there. Yeah, really good. Okay, fine. And then the Hayek could have taken up the rest of the episode. And we could have fleshed out their characters a bit more, et cetera, et cetera. However, when they likened it to the Neanderthals being wiped out on Earth, every human who's, and every person listening to this goes, we wiped out the Neanderthals, did we? Do we care? Just no, that was like ancient history. You know, I mean, why would we be bothered about that now? You know, you know, in history, humans don't like it when there's been genocide. I get that. More recently, of course, and people still go on about genocide from like 200-400 years ago, saying, oh, that's still a bad thing and you should still be, you know, punished for doing it and all this type of thing that's still going on this to this day in wars across the world. But do we really care if Neanderthals have been wiped out 100,000 years ago and we're the species that have made it? I mean, how's it going for us?
Maybe we'll be gone soon too, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Mm.
So anyway, yeah, so I'm agreeing with you guys. I'm going to split you in the middle and say that I'm going to give this a 2, which all three of us have put this in our bottom 10 episodes of this so far. So that's it. That's the end of this episode. Join us again next week when we will be discussing Season 5, Episode 8, In the Kingdom of the Blind.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.